Did you know Bridgestone developed a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials? Making a difference today for future generations. That's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
And a happy trade deadline eve to you and yours. Ladies, gentlemen, fanatics of all ages, welcome to Phillies Therapy. My name is Paul Boyer. We are recording Monday morning, July 31st, about, 20 hours or so, 24, how do you do math? 24 plus 10, whatever. The trade deadline is tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern.
Don't ask me to do math. I've been awake since 3:30 a.m.
Yeah, I have no excuse. You have plenty of good reason. Anyway, trade deadline Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern. The Phillies have yet to make a move. A lot of other moves being made in the meantime, especially in the last week or so since we joined you. Speaking of joining, Matt Gelb of The Athletic, who, as mentioned, has been up for a few hours already and is in Miami for what is a pretty big four-game series against the Marlins. Matt, apart from a little bit sleepy, how are you?
Pretty good. Trying to collect as much information as I can regarding the Phillies right now, where they stand. And I expect them to make additions, but I think as we've kind of seen, like I think the it's very much a seller's market, and the pieces that are being made available are not of, you know, the highest caliber. There are definitely upgrades for the Phillies to make, but in the end, I think, you know, the pieces on the current roster are probably more important in the last 2 months.
Oh, for sure.
Trade they make. Yeah.
And depending on who you were rooting for the Phillies to pick up during this trade deadline, just to catch you up on some of the highlights in the last week since we joined you, former Phillies legend Noah Syndergaard went to Cleveland for Amit Rosario in an interesting challenge trade swap. Kike Hernandez went back to the Dodgers. The Marlins, who the Phillies are going to see, picked up Jorge Lopez for Dylan Floro, who had pitched pretty well against the Phillies. Lucas Giolito went to the Angels. Another former Phillies great, Carlos Santana, went to the Brewers. Another former Phillies great, David Robertson, went to the Marlins. He could also show up this series. Lance Lynn and Joe Kelly went to the Dodgers, who have been very busy. Randall Grichuk, who might have been on some radars for the Phillies, went to the Angels. Jordan Hicks, big flamethrower from the Cardinals, went to the Blue Jays. Max Scherzer from the Mets went to the Rangers, along with Jordan Montgomery, who the Phillies were in the mix for last year. It's been a very active last few days, last week. But Matt, the Phillies have not really done anything in the trade market. They seem content to wait out their move. Is there any clearer sense on who they might be looking at now, especially as candidates continue to drop off the board?
I think Grichuk is a guy that they did like. I do. I had heard that from numerous people that he was on their short list for that right-handed hitting outfielder that they're looking for. The sense that I've gotten is that the Phillies don't see a huge gap between some of the available players that they're looking at, and that they're willing to just kind of wait it out, right? They're willing for the price to wait the prices. I think they might see it as being a little too high. I think Paul, and like maybe, you know, people will laugh at this, but I think the biggest Phillies related thing that has happened in the last week with regards to trades is that the Mets seem to be taking not only steps back for this season, but also next. And I do think that that's rather significant for the Phillies, not in the immediate, but as they kind of do their long range planning and think about next year too. Not to say the Mets won't be competitive or difficult to play in 2024, but I would not be surprised to see Verlander traded here in the next 30 hours? I don't know how many hours. But I would not be surprised at all if Justin Verlander is pitching for the Astros for the remainder of the season. That would not stun me. I think that's very plausible. So interesting to see them take a few steps back, because their rotation right now is a mess. The rotation for 2024. Really questionable. So that's definitely has, that's relevant to the Phillies, I think.
Yeah. It's brought about the emergence of a new term. It's not rebuilding, it's repurposing, because as Billy Epler puts it, because they're getting rid of some guys who, like you mentioned, were under contract for next year and who might have bounced back. You know, you look at Scherzer and he's underperformed this year relative to what you expect Max Scherzer to do, but we don't know that he wouldn't bounce back next year. We don't know that yet. I mean, maybe he is on the decline, but maybe he bounces back. Verlander, he seemed like he was on the slope a little bit more than Scherzer last year. So to see him struggle a little bit and also be hurt, that's a little less surprising to me. But I think what is interesting now is watching all of these different teams who are presumably positioning themselves for Ohtani over the winter. And you'd have to figure that even though the Mets are kind of a mess with their pitching right now, that they're still looking that way. So even though things could be a little bit worse in some areas, certainly there's a little less depth to speak of right now for their sake. It doesn't mean that they're, you know, taking themselves out of the bidding for some really impactful players next year. Now, what it does do is it brings into reality the fact that the Mets are going to be a little bit more of a shell of themselves with this end of season stretch that they play against the Phillies. What we had previewed as they started their slide and as July was kicking into gear here, it looks like the Mets are going to be a little bit weaker later in the year. That helps the Phillies. There's no doubt.
Out of their last 10 games are against the Mets.
Yeah, and that's huge. You know, for an NL wildcard field that is strange and continuously shifting, the Cubs are all of a sudden way back into it. The Padres are only 5 games back. They're still hanging in the periphery. They're only 2 games under 500 now. The Phillies are a half game out as we record today with the Marlins Brewers up on them. Tied in the loss column, the Phillies have a game in hand.
So that's the other thing, that the other development to me, Paul, in the last week, is that really those teams, other than the Marlins getting David Robertson, have also not made any moves yet. And I do expect some of those teams to add. I think both the Giants and the Reds are going to add, I guess, if you want to count the Brewers in this. Matt Klentak is reunited with Carlos Santana. Padres, I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, man.
I would sell. I hate to say that because I really encourage teams to go for it, and you want to see teams go for it. And
yes,
I get why they're going for it. They're going to go for it is because they have incredible attendance and there's a lot of attention and interest in their team. They probably could do pretty well. I'm not saying you sell Soto, but I think like Blake Snell and Josh Hader, like they could probably do pretty well right now if they traded both those guys, because they would instantly be the two best players available on this market. From my current read of who is available and who isn't.
They've got a little 3-game winning streak going on as we record here before games on Monday, and are 8 games under their Pythag. Their Pythagorean record has them at 60-46. And of course their actual record, where it matters, is that they're 52-54. So yeah, they're caught between a rock and a hard place, right? They've clearly got guys who could fetch interesting to very good returns, depending on, you know, who you talk about. Blake Snell, sure, and Juan Soto especially, although it doesn't look like they're likely to deal him, flip him. That is not an enviable position to be in. You know, the Phillies are clearly a buyer. To what level, we're not sure yet. But the worst spot to be in is unsure what to do. Do you believe that your team is better than how it's performed? And do you bet on that to buy and add to it and wager a little bit more with your in-house reinforcements? Or do you punt, like you said, and possibly piss off a couple fans in the process who think you should probably keep going for it? Padres ownership, for their part, usually seems like they're willing to go in and spend and be competitive when, you know, AJ Preller is like, yeah, there's somebody I can pick up, give me the money for it. Like, okay. So they're going to be a team to watch. I could see
it. Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. If the Padres and Cubs, okay, there's one thing to not sell. Do they also buy, right? Or do they just kind of stand pat and go with what they have? And that those two teams do make it interesting.
Yeah, and so that, and the Cubs' impact in particular, you know, there was probably some peripheral thought about maybe Cody Bellinger being moved, with maybe even the Phillies being involved there, and that is now done, because the Cubs are only 3.5 back of a wild card. That's striking distance, man. At the end
and
of July,
and it's Central. I mean, if anything, they probably have a better shot in the Central.
That's true. Central's very crowded. So the playoff race is slightly different from where we looked at it last week. There are a couple, you know, the Cardinals have begun their sell-off. There are probably still more pieces to come there. The Mets are probably, like you said, looking to trade Verlander. That could be very interesting over the next day and a half. And then other teams were not sure. But back to the Phillies, the team we really care about here. Is the thought now just like, okay, it's probably somebody like Adam Duvall if the Red Sox even sell? Or Matt, are there other ideas getting kicked around here about what this right-handed or lefty mashing outfield bat, this prototype that we're all fashioning to get added to this team, looks like? Is there anything new to maybe add to the mix in terms of targets?
I have a trade that I would make.
Okay.
I don't know that this is going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen.
Okay.
But I would look at Seattle and I would look at two things. And like Teoscar Hernandez is a decent fit. He's not having a good year.
Yeah.
He's got a decent track record. You know, you could stick him in left field and he could give you some, you know, lower in the order, maybe fifth or sixth, you know, pop, right-handed pop. Mm. And I wouldn't stop there though. Like I would also look at their bullpen and like I would really think about Paul Sewald, the closer.
Oh.
And so like if you package those two guys together, like it would not be cheap. Like Sewald's got control after this year. I believe he's got one more year of arbitration after this year. He's making like $4 million this year. He's
You're right. Yes.
$7 or $8 million next year, you know, on the scale. And I think he would give them, another late inning right-handed arm to trust. And you really accomplish two huge needs, I think, with one trade. Now, putting those two guys together, like, you know, I think you're looking at having to give at least one of your better prospects. I'm thinking like in the, you know, Griff McGarry, Johan Rojas kind of range, you know, like right around there. And it's a good debate to have, like whether you would pull the trigger on that one. McGarry plus another mid-level prospect and then maybe a lottery ticket, three guys there to get a solid late inning reliever and a right-handed power hitter who's having a down year. I don't know, that's a trade that I would think about. I know that they've you know, Hernandez is definitely an option for them. The Sewald thing is just kind of something that I know he's available. Like the Mariners are definitely listening on him, from what I understand. So I don't know. That's my pie in the sky idea right now.
Okay.
And we'll see. Like Duvall, you mentioned him, would advise you to look at his numbers since the first week of the season, and they are they're not good. he has not been productive. And I mean, yeah, any player you're acquiring here has some warts, I think.
Sure.
You know, the Mets guys, Tommy Pham, Mark Canna, maybe Canna is a better fit, you know, less power than some of those other options. Lane Thomas, it sounds like, is not going to get traded from what I understand.
Good. I don't want him.
Yeah, I don't think it's a fit, even if he were to be traded. I'm not so sure the Phillies match up there with the Nats.
Yeah, not a fit.
So my other pie in the sky idea was just trade for Jeremy Candelario and turn him into a left fielder. I don't think he's ever played the outfield. That's probably too risky.
I like it, first of all. I've wondered about Jeremy Candelario at different points throughout this month, and he's having a nice season, and I feel like that would be interesting. But yeah, you'd have to think about converting him to. Yeah, that's very risky. The more time has gone on with the team being quiet, the more I feel this creeping sense that I won't say something bigger will happen. That was the word that came to mind at first, but I don't think that's entirely correct. The more I feel that something different is brewing within that trade war room with the Phillies right now.
I think it's more that they just are like trying to call some bluff here.
They could be. They very well could
be. That's my sense of it. But like, you know, I've learned that you cannot rule, especially with Dombrowski. I mean, he is opportunistic.
Yeah,
you know, and if there are guys with control who are available, and it is hard to tell which of those players are available, you can bet that he's talking and listening and entertaining those ideas. I think more than anything, this is kind of like delay. I mean, again, you know, there's been some moves, but a lot of teams have also not made moves. You know, contending teams have not made moves yet. And I think a lot of it is just the longer you wait, the more you call their bluff, the more prices go down. You know, if they really don't think there's much of a difference between some of these guys are looking at, then and they'd be okay landing, you know, one of three different outfielders or one of three different pitchers, then, you know, I understand why they waited out.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, the Paul Sewald idea is something that fits that mold, right? Not necessarily a star. Paul Sewald is a very good relief pitcher. Thinking like that's different. That's a new name and it makes sense. I'm thinking that there is just something that doesn't quite work with the obvious fits that we've all been talking about for a couple of weeks now. And that something like that maybe in that mold might materialize. And I would not be averse to dealing Griff McGarry in the right deal, just him in particular, and maybe even Abel if the right thing came along. It doesn't look like that's the this is the deadline for that. But you look at the way, you know, McGarry and Abel in particular, they're different guys, and it's you get into sticky situations when you scout stat lines of guys in the minor league. So that's not quite what I'm going to do. But McGarry is not a control artist, and it's not really getting a whole lot better as he's gone on. He's still walking a lot of guys. Now, strikeouts, huge. That's really helpful. The command hasn't improved to the point where he's looking like a guy who could go through a lot of major league innings without, you know, running into a disaster every week at this point. It's why he doesn't look like a very viable 2023 option the more time goes on and the more the walks keep, you know, hanging around. Because major league hitters, they'll wait on that, and it'll be kind of icky for a team with, you know, contending aspirations, pitching somebody like that down the stretch. That's risky. Again, that's a very blanket statement, and I know prospect guys might be a little mad with a generalization like that, but you have to kind of look at the way that he's performing on the whole, right? He's not looking like a super elite pitching prospect right now. And if there is a deal that can get you somebody with an additional year or two of control is, you know, the ideal, where you can leverage some of this value that he does still have, McGarry, then you have to think about it, and you have to be kind of okay with it and realistic and think like, all right, we may be acquiring somebody with a little bit of a wart, even if they're, you know, we're not talking about dealing McGarry for Adam Duvall or Tommy Pham. But if you're bringing somebody in who's a little bit less than a star for one of your name brand prospects, you have to realize that this is not a perfect arm. This is not, you know, an Eury Pérez in Miami. This is not, you know, somebody who's pitching lights out. He's got his advantages. But if you can leverage that value for something that can help you this year and ideally next year too at the major league level, that's more than somebody like McGarry probably gives you at this point.
Yeah, and I'll say that more evaluators that have gone in and seen McGarry this year are leaning toward him, you know, most likely, you know, writing him up as more likely to end up as a reliever in the majors because of those command issues. And he's shown flashes, like, for sure. I expect him, if he's not traded, I expect him to be in AAA, like, probably next week.
Yeah.
They'll see what they got there. But I agree with you 100%. But like, it's not for a rental, right? I mean, the caveat is that, like, yes, I think they should absolutely be open to trading, just about anybody. But it's not for a rental. And so yeah, I mean, that's what the seawall thing, you know, it's kind of interesting, I guess. Like, I don't know how realistic that is, but, you know, probably the conversation starts with at least McGarry, I would think.
One thing that's making this a little bit easier to take, you know, potentially thinking about McGarry as a reliever, not looking at Abel as much of a 2023 contributor, if at all, right now, is that the starting pitching depth has really gotten a boost. And I remember talking last week about how I wasn't quite bought in yet, but he's had two outings since last week and both have been really good. And I'm starting to buy in a little bit more. That's Chris Sanchez, who has a role, who has been kept in that role for a while now, which is what I wanted early in the year. And, you know, against a little bit weaker competition over the weekend, he still looked really good this week. Matt, I think you had a piece or a little factoid in your recent story up on The Athletic, where his ERA is among the 10 best in baseball in his last, you know, couple of months. I don't remember
Since he got put back in the rotation, June 17th.
Yeah, there you go. Since June 17th, since his recall, it's a month and a half. It's an ERA under 3. He hasn't been overpowering, but he's getting, you know, favorable contact, which you need in front of this defense, which has looked awful lately, like really awful. Not doing anybody any favors. Do you feel as though we're now at the point where Chris Sanchez is like, all right, that's mine. We're good with our 5 right now. Maybe there's a smaller, minor move for somebody with an option we can store in AAA just in case, you know, to pick up. But that this is the 5 we're working with now because Sanchez has just claimed that as his own?
No. I still think they're looking at rotation. I think in their ideal world, they find someone, you know, who maybe can do both, right? Who's kind of like a swing guy.
Okay.
But that's reducing like the leverage, right? So, I mean, that to me is the other scenario. To me is like, you go out and get a leverage, high leverage reliever, a setup type guy. Mm-hmm. And then Matt Strom becomes like your, you know, in case of Chris Sanchez falling back to earth, pull ripcord.
Okay.
And you put Strom back in the rotation. Maybe that's not realistic because I know they're concerned about the innings, but he has, you know, they've been using, I think they've been finding ways to give him rest. He has not pitched as much recently.
Yeah.
But no, I don't think they're sold totally on Sanchez. And I understand that. I understand them. Like, at least like, it's not that they're like, we have to go get a starter. I still think though that my understanding is that they are very much still looking at starting pitching. And to give you a clear idea. So, in the National League, since Sanchez's recall, he has the fifth lowest ERA, among starters, and it's Blake Snell, Joe Musgrove, Justin Verlander, Jesus Luzardo, and then Chris Sanchez. And you know, there are reasons to believe that like what he's doing is real. By the way, he also has the lowest WHIP in the National League since his recall.
Go figure.
And behind him is Andrew Abbott from the Reds, a rookie.
Yeah.
And then Corbin Burns is third.
Oh,
so
our winter tree darling, Corbin Burns.
I know that's my big new thing. So he's been really good, and yeah, I mean, there's a lot of talk about, you know, why doesn't he go back out for the sixth inning in Sunday's game, and he wasn't feeling well. Like I think I would have probably sent him back out there. And if you put somebody on, then you take him out. Like, I understand having somebody warming up in the bullpen to start the sixth inning, you know, and if he puts a guy on in a two-run game, then that's when you give him the hook. You know, he said he wasn't feeling great. He didn't have the kind of energy he has. And you could see, you know, the stuff was down. Definitely did not have as good of stuff as he's had Sunday, as he's had recently. Mm. Hit three guys, walked two others. Velocity was not there.
Yeah.
You know, but he did not allow a ball to be hit out of the infield after the first batter of the game. And he still did fairly well without his best stuff. I think Thompson probably made a mistake there. I understand his reasoning behind it, especially that he wasn't feeling well and that he thought he had about 15 pitches left. Even if he does go back out there, probably should have pitched the sixth.
Yeah. Yeah, that was tough to see. I mean, it's understandable if he was fighting an illness. There had to have been some extenuating circumstance to take him out there. Because everybody's first thought was to, oh, okay, the lineup has turned over. It's right at the top for the third time through.
And that definitely factored in. Yeah, that was definitely part of their calculus. Yeah, and Thompson after the game is right. But like, he wasn't going to throw a no-hitter, like, even if he was healthy.
Right.
Like, he was at 73 pitches. And, I think I would have let him at least start the sixth.
Well, yeah, because what we're looking at now is that cascading effect of the bullpen starting to get a little bit taxed. I mean, especially some of the more, you know, high performing guys. They're not throwing necessarily huge numbers of pitches in their outings, but, you know, you look at somebody like Kimbrel, who's pitched in five of the last 8 days. You look at Soto, who's pitched, what is it, three of the last five, and basically
he's on
every
pace
other
for,
day.
For high. Yeah, career high in games. Kimbrel's on pace for most games, I think, in about six seasons. Yeah, it also, like, there's a trickle-down effect within the game, and I kind of wrote a little bit about this. I mean, because it left you, you know, come the 10th inning, now you only have three guys left, and really you only had two, because Strom had pitched two innings on Saturday. He was not available Sunday.
Yeah.
You had two guys to choose from. You had Andrew Vasquez and Dylan Covey, and they went with Vasquez, and the guy was literally Palacios was literally trying to bunt. Vasquez threw two balls, and the second one was him in the head, and then he threw a meatball that got hit for a game-winning home run. So, not great. And you know, but that's the trickle down, right? I mean, and especially because, you know, Dominguez comes into the sixth and can't get out of it, and all of a sudden you have to use Hoffman there. And I know why he only used Hoffman. He didn't have Hoffman come back. They really liked Soto against that one spot in the lineup there, and Soto should have gotten through the inning without giving up a run, but Edmundo Sosa didn't hear Trey Turner calling for a pop-up, and, you know, so here we are. But, yeah, there's definitely a fact, and I think, Paul, you probably agree with me. Like, if you had to make a decision right now. Like, what do you add? A solid number four starter or like another setup reliever? And I think I'm leaning toward reliever, which sounds crazy, right? Because the bullpen's been so good. It's been their best unit all year. There's been some guys who've stepped up, but I think in the end, it's going to come down to how much faith do you have in Jeff Hoffman and Junior Marte, and then also like how concerned are you about Sir Anthony Domingos?
Yeah, well, I think the Sir Anthony concern is probably going to be real for a long time, just because he's got such this delicate history, and he keeps coming back from injury, and you're like, I'm holding my breath every time
he takes two outings. Yeah, the first one was decent, I thought, and then he gave up an inherited runner.
Yeah.
But it was on a kind of like a worm burner single, and he had some swing and miss. The second one, not good. I mean, yesterday was not good.
No. I mean, I love the guy. Don't get me wrong. And I think when he is right, he's tremendous. But he's not 100% right now. He's just not. And I think it's something to consider. You know, you're right that the unit has been so good, better than any of us could have expected with this list of names. Absolutely. I don't think there's anybody out there. But he's getting worked a lot. You know, they do need to be careful. I think it does make sense. You know, maybe there is something very real with what Jeff Hoffman is doing, and he's been an incredible find. Maybe you can say that you can still rely on Matt Strom for multi-inning appearances through the rest of the year. Maybe you can say, yeah, we can keep Craig Kimbrel on a prorated 70 game pace through the rest of this year. Maybe you can say that. There are biometrics that maybe they have more faith than that, but it feels a little too tenuous.
Yeah, and Alvarado is going to throw a bullpen Tuesday here in Miami.
Oh, good.
And they're happy with the progression there. But again, like, he's probably, you know, at least a week, probably at least 10 days out, right? And there are really no guarantees with him. You know,
yeah.
He's been tremendous when healthy, but this is the second time this season that his elbow has not mm-hmm. felt good. And so, you know, if and when he does come back, it's kind of in the back of your head. It's like, okay, well, how long is he back for?
I guess the question then becomes from my side is, does a move for a reliever preclude a move for an outfielder, or can they do both?
Both, yes.
They can do both. All right.
I think they will do both. I expect them to add at least one bat and at least one pitcher to the major league roster before Tuesday's deadline.
Well, it would certainly be a help, and they're really just no solid indications, you know, from where I sit, there has just been nothing coming out about what direction they're leaning in. Like you mentioned, there was.
Yes, it's very hard to get information.
Like maybe.
And it's not even coming from them. It's from other teams who have talked to them, because they won't come from the Phillies, and that's fine. It's been hard. They've done a really good job of just like kind of, staying on the edges of this. Like teams know what they want. And I think they know that, the Phillies will make upgrades, but I think more than anything, the view of the front office is that the players that we need are already here.
Well, honestly, I'd agree with that insofar as they need these guys to perform better. There's just, you know, we both of us say that we hate the talk of, oh, it's a big deadline acquisition getting this guy back from injury or something like that, but you know, Nick Castellanos can't hit 110 for an entire month. And Turner's just going to be a 700 OPS shortstop for the rest of the year. As far as my mind goes, you just need to wipe this year and focus on next year and hope for better from an expectation standpoint, not from his standpoint. But
Nick Castellanos' OPS has dropped 103 points since July 1st.
It's just come out of almost nowhere, because I was feeling great. I was riding high. I remember one of my, you know, preseason things was like, oh yeah, Nick Castellanos is going to hit 300. And what does he do? He comes out the first half of the year and hits, you know, he's hitting 305 or something like that by the All-Star break. He's looking, you know, reinvigorated. He's looking better. And then whatever happened, he's just
he started swinging at everything again.
Yeah. And I don't know why that switch flipped, but now he's doing that. And he misplayed a couple of balls in the outfield. I think it was on Saturday, you know, within a couple of innings of each other, cost bases or outs, and just didn't look great out there when
he didn't misplay a ball this week.
Right. Yeah, he's not unique there. Look, it's everything that could go wrong, I guess, even aside from health, because health was mostly fine, Chris Sanchez aside. Anything that could go wrong went wrong. You know, the guys were just not coming through at big spots. You know, lots of strikeouts, the bugaboos, everything was on display. And it wasn't great. But that's why you move on, right? Like, they have had a flight now to clear their heads. They're out of Pittsburgh. They get four games in division against Miami. And there's a chance to flip the script, right? Because they just keep doing this flip-flopping thing like we've seen the last couple of years, where they can take two out of three from Baltimore and play some really inspired ball and then come out and fall flat against a lesser team in Pittsburgh. It's just like,
yeah, and that's who they are. I think, you know, people are frustrated. I think rightfully so. I guess the thing I would say is that, yeah, this is rather emblematic of the Phillies in recent years. And I think we've seen them play week at a time, just some of the worst baseball imaginable. And and then all of a sudden you look up 10 days later and they're on a streak. And
right.
It's a very difficult way to exist, because that hot streak, you know, is not always guaranteed. And no. You know, when they lose, they lose. They lose in nightmarish ways. And I mean, there's a lot of focus on Rob Thompson after the weekend, and people were upset about the lineup decisions. And I know there's a lot of chatter about, it's like, okay, we'll keep, you know, we got to move Stott and Bohm up. And honestly, like Saturday, they were hitting fourth and fifth, and I don't know. I mean, I think I understand the reason. I think it's a decent spot for them. They both have high contact rates. They put the ball in play. Yeah. The idea is that, you know, Schwarber and Castellanos and Harper get on base, and then you have your contact guys in the middle there to drive them in. And I there's a lot of focus on Thompson, and I don't think he made the right call with Sanchez. I think he could have kept him in there for at least a couple batters in the sixth inning. I don't know if it would have made a difference in the game. Maybe it does. I think this all comes back to, like, his players need to play better. And I think a lot of it comes back, Paul, to the fact that they do not hit home runs. And it just takes so much for them to get a rally going and sustain something, because it takes, like, three hits, a walk, like,
yeah,
ground out. I mean, there are too many times where they need an extra base hit and they do not get it. And that adds up. You know, Bohm took a great swing in Sunday's game, hit a ball to right center that not a lot of right-handed hitters hit to in PNC Park. It was a really impressive swing. And that was it. I mean, they hit two home runs over the weekend. And they need to hit for more power. Like, I think it's not as simple as that, but I think it kind of is.
Well, yeah. I mean, even just looking at the splits, right? Like, and this is a full season thing. It doesn't even highlight how disparate I think it's been over the last couple of weeks. The slugging drops 23 points with the bases empty to men on. They're slugging 423 with the bases empty and 400 flat as a team with men on base. And that's not a winning formula. That's just not a winning formula at all. And I think it can be frustrating when you recalibrate your brain to think like, okay, we're just not going to get that big swing, that rally killer swing to give us two or three runs at once. You know, like, everything has to be a rally, which we're now seeing, you know, the harsh reality of living as a rally team can be a little bit feast or famine. More often famine than feast. I don't know why so many of these guys see these dips in their performance from, you know, runners on to runners off. I don't know why that's the case. You know, you look at somebody like Turner, he's hitting 230 with a 291 slug with runners on base. 291 slug with runners on base. That's 182 plate appearances.
So like, as a team, bases empty, they're ninth in slugging in the majors.
Mm.
And with runners on base, they are 20th in slugging.
Yeah. See, that's huge. And I don't know if it's that everybody is in their heads now, but again, this is full season. I don't know if everybody's in their heads now, especially that they're pressing and realizing, like, oh man, we haven't been coming through with guys on base. We need a big hit here.
there's a lot of that.
They're pressing. Yeah. Like, they're clearly pressing. There are a lot of guys who you can just tell are anxious. It's a shame. I wish they would find a way to relax, but that's easier said than done.
Yeah, home runs can tend to do that for you.
Yeah.
And even if it's not your home run, it's someone else's home run. That can relax everyone. A three-run homer is the most beautiful thing there is. And they have not hit many of three-run homers this year.
Well, I mean, they went
back Brandon Marsh's, like, bases-clearing double Saturday's game was, like, one of only, like, two or three, like, three RBI hits they've had. Like, you know, non-home runs. It's just, like, it's just – I don't know. The lack of slug is catching up. I really think that.
I mean, they went back-to-back in a game last week. What was it, Realmuto and Marsh?
Yeah.
And that was the first time they'd gone back-to-back this year?
All year, yeah.
Come on. They did it at double-digit times last year. I know that. I think it, Destiny Legardo from our friends over at Phillies Nation, I think, had this. I hope I'm citing that correctly because I'm going off memory here. But I think it was 12 times they went back-to-back in 22, and that this was the first time in mid-July. It's so weird.
So the best thing that they can do at this deadline, again, it's not going to be a perfect, it's not going to be something that's going to fix everything.
Yeah.
But if you get somebody who can hit the ball out of the ballpark every now and then, more than they've gotten out of left field, Schwarber's left field, more than they've gotten out of, you know, whatever you're, because yeah. he's, you know, one of the only guys who will get the ball out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I do.
That maybe has a, you know, cascading effect, is that if there are just a few more that go over the fence from this new acquisition, that it just makes everybody in a better spot. And it's not going to fix everything, but that is, like, that I do feel like is the one thing they can do that would help this team right now, without question, is get a little more pop.
Yeah. It would be nice to have a comfortable win now and then.
You looked this up for me. I mean,
yeah. We were going back and forth.
Crazy about. Yeah. How many close games they've played of late and how few innings they've actually led or even led by three runs.
It
has had an effect on the pitching, no doubt, more stressful innings. And yeah, they've had to lean on certain guys. As much as you want to see Dylan Covey pitch, you haven't had a chance to do that.
Yeah. As of Friday or Saturday, I forget when we were going back and forth on this, it was six of the 195 innings they had played since the rout against the Nationals. They had led at the end of that inning by more than three runs. So outside of a safe situation, six innings in that many games. That's just, everything is close.
Now that the Saturday, that was Friday night we were talking about it.
Friday
night. Sunday were, just added 19 more innings to that, essentially.
Yep. So there you go. I mean, look, it is frustrating. And I get that it's funny because this is a sport that demands just a ton of patience. And right about now, every year lately, with the way this team has played, is about when a lot of reserves of patience seem to expire and need that replenishment. They need to get refilled. They need to have a reason to be a little bit more patient with what's going on because they're playing frustrating baseball. But the fact is, big picture again, taking that step back like we so often like to do here, they're in striking distance a half game out because they have that game in hand. They're winning back in the win column of the wild card. They are a wild card caliber team. They are not the Braves. You cannot expect them to be the Braves. They will not be the Braves, regardless of who they pick up at the trade deadline. They are a team that will likely finish the year in the mid to high 80s in wins and be plus or minus two games for a wild card spot. That's who they are. Flaws and all, that's what this amounts to. The way they played over the last week, I think, is emblematic of that. It's microcosmic.
You know what somebody reminded me of this week is that Yoan Camargo was still on the roster until they acquired Edmundo Sosa a few days before the deadline. And Adubel Herrera and Jerry Reese-Familia were still on the roster until the day of the deadline when they're both DFA'd. And Didi Gregorius was still on the roster until about 2 days after the deadline. I do think the Phillies are going to churn through some of the weaker spots on the roster here in the next 36 hours, 48 hours, however long it takes.
Well, when the moves do come, they will probably be something of a surprise, you'd think, just because there's been so little coming out about this team right now.
I'm trying.
Yeah, no, it is certainly not your fault or any of your colleagues or other folks who are up in the press box, because they've really just kept a lid on this whole thing. It's not even like you're seeing stuff come out from, you know, some of the more national beat folks who may have talked to somebody about connections there. There's just been nothing either way. It is nothing. All we have is theory. It's been really interesting to watch because you almost felt like by this point there'd be something trickling out, but they've kept a lid on it. And I really just think that means it's building to something interesting.
They're
I could be wrong.
Buying, they're just all buying, standing in line to buy their Kelly Green jerseys.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. That, speaking of patience running out and something else to look at, yeah, that was a nice little distraction from the last two games of the weekend is getting the Eagles Kelly Greens back out there.
Do you think people will be lined up for hours next year to buy the Phillies City Connects?
Oh, are they finally coming next year?
I don't know. God help us, because who knows what those things are going to look like. They're guaranteed to be bad, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's going to be some kind of bell on it. Just leave the sandwiches out of it and we'll be all right. Just don't go minor leagues with it and we'll be okay. Minor leagues are fun, but like, just don't do that.
It's minor leagues.
Yeah. I'm a little worried about that. I didn't realize that was maybe coming next year.
That will come next year. Yes.
Oh boy. Yeah. I don't have a lot of faith in that. Okay. So here we are. We're going to wrap things up early here on Monday morning. There's still a lot of work to be done, and you'd have to figure maybe there won't be a move by the time, you know, first pitch rolls around tonight, but 6 o'clock is about 40, 45 minutes before first pitch on Tuesday. That's the deadline this year, August 1st, 6 o'clock. It's kind of strange timing, but that's when it is. The Phillies stand to make one, possibly two or three, who knows how many moves. Maybe it's somebody obvious. Maybe it's
guaranteed to be a move as soon as this podcast is done recording.
Oh, yeah. So you're welcome for that. they have moves to make, but they've got to play better ball with the guys who are already in. I think we can all come to that understanding. And they're still in it. So everybody breathe a little easier. Hopefully this Marlins series does not go like a typical Marlins series. And we can all feel a little bit better about things by the time Tuesday evening rolls around.
We must be coming up on the anniversary of the 19-11 game.
Oh, good. Yeah, thanks. That's something I needed to be reminded of. Anyway, here we go. So we'll keep you updated as best we can. Both of us will try and get in touch with all of you again this week after the dust settles. The Phillies have made their moves that have hopefully been finalized by that point. We can talk a little bit more about that and what it means for the rest of the season. Maybe I'll be with you Tuesday as the deadline comes around for something. Who knows? Just stay tuned. Hopefully you're subscribed. We'd love to keep you posted on this sort of stuff. This is fun for us. And even as frustrating as the team can be at times, nothing quite like trade deadline season. This is exciting. For me, at least, as a fan who doesn't have to go around and try and get this information out of club and team officials. Wink, wink. So thanks again, Matt, as always, for coming on after a flight and hours in the air. Enjoy Florida. Hopefully it's not, 95% humidity to go with
your
96 degrees. Oh, good. Well, enjoy the dome and enjoy air conditioning.
That's right.
Phillies and Marlins kick off a big 4-game series and the trade deadline. It's coming. They're going to make some moves. We'll be back with you soon, so stay tuned. For Matt, I am Paul. Go check out his stuff at The Athletic. And we'll check you out again a little bit later this week. Take care.
While no one knows what tomorrow may bring, Bridgestone is working toward a more positive outlook. With innovations like developing a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials. It's just one of the many ways Bridgestone is making a difference today, for generations to come. Because that's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.